There's still a long way to go. Lots of questions to be answered still. But what's your feelings, your reaction to, yes, you got to go through and get two negative tests, but it sounds like Blue Jays players are cleared to come to Rogers Center for training camp.
Yeah, you know, I'm all over the map with it. There's so many things that are really contradictory and all this stuff, but you know, it's awesome to see that they're actually trying to play baseball, but then there's times you just look at all the things that have to go into place for it to actually happen and then also to continue. Sometimes that part of it just seems overwhelming. And, you know, I think just that the difficult part is, like, this is a serious, you know, it's a serious pandemic. It's a serious virus. And, you know, just if something does go wrong, the chances that if something bad could happen are real. But I think it's kind of like, you know, it just kind of mirrors what's going on in society. And, you know, just the one thing with the baseball one that really kind of gets me, I think basketball has got the ideal setup in this circumstance. Hockey's probably got the next best one for sure. It's just with the baseball, the travel, the teams that are going to be in some of these states that are really struggling to contain it. There's just a lot of things that are going to happen, and you kind of have to go on the fly with this. And I think some of the questions you need answered aren't even questions that you know you have yet. So, like, I'm a little bit all over the
Tim, we know your experience being around major league clubhouses. Your major league experience being around clubhouses. How tough is it to socially distance, and how hard is it going to be for those guys to be not that close to one another when a major league clubhouse is like your home? It's like you guys are like family during the season. How tough will it be to be very cautious to not spread the virus amongst teammates?
I just think early it'll be okay. I mean, you're going to be on your best behavior, but I just think human nature in general, and you can already see cases in other sports where like a certain guy, you know, all it takes is one guy to kind of sneak out of the protocol and kind of put people at risk. And I think, you know, that's kind of human nature. I mean, I think you're asking a lot of a lot of different people, just even inside your own bubble. You're putting a lot of trust in the hands of the guy next to you. The thing about sports is, like, your teammates, and you like to be close when you're on good teams. When you're on bad teams, you want to be as far apart from everybody as you can. But like, you know, it's the nature of the game is to be close and be good teammates. So it's going to be difficult. I think they're going to do everything they can do, especially, you know, take the Rogers Center, for example. I'm sure it's going to be super responsible and super good. But you just naturally gravitate towards other people. And I remember thinking, you know, when I was in spring training with the Giants this year, and when it came time to know that you were going to go and they were going to close down camps, you still were close to people. And so, like, I think it's tough. And the bad thing about it is that it just takes one bad moment or just one bad thing to happen for it all to go bad. And you're asking a lot, but at the same time, it's probably worth the, you know, it's probably worth the risk of trying to do it.
Well, Tim, I wonder if something could be implemented like was being talked about with the NBA of having a quote, snitch line where other players or people can say, hey, so-and-so left the bubble and text in somewhere or call in somewhere and out people. That seems like you could have a lot of complications in series of just straight up lies. But I hope it doesn't come down to something like that. Is that one way to try to keep people accountable?
Yeah, you just have to trust everybody to do it. Obviously, not only like 20 to 30-year-old athletes or 35-year-old athletes, but staff as well. I mean, there's a lot of staff members that are in this tier one protocol as well. So I mean, it's not like as a 53-year-old man, I'm like the most responsible human being on the earth either. In this case, I would be, but you know, it's a lot to ask. I don't think the snitch things work. I think the peer pressure and guys, you know, just kind of like being with each other and like, you know, and veteran leadership on your club doing it. But again, I think you're asking a lot, and I don't think the problems are really going to be like, I think Toronto's got a really good system because the players have to stay there at the Rogers Center. You know, the problem is you're playing the Tampa Bay and you're playing New York. And those guys are going to have the luxuries of living at home. So when they're going home, who's to say they're not going to a restaurant, they're not going to a coffee shop? Who's to say they're not going to go get gas or go somewhere where they're going to come in contact with an infected person? I mean, Florida had over 10,000 new cases yesterday. Like, and you're allowing those guys to go home and then work out of the thing, and then they're going to be able to travel to cities like Toronto, like responsible cities like Toronto. And I think that's where you're going to, I think that's probably where your bigger issues would come from.
Tim, how tough is it going to be for a lot of these guys to change their habits they've been doing their whole life, spitting the sunflower seeds, spitting in their glove, licking their hands? How tough, high fives, how tough is that going to be for players to adapt to this new world?
Yeah, I think it's going to be really difficult. I mean, you're going to ask a pitcher out there who's grinding, trying to get a hitter out, and you know, licks his fingers for to try to get grip on the baseball to, like, stop in the heat of competition. I think that's going to be tough. I mean, I think guys with, you know, that kind of rely on tobacco or something just to kind of keep them occupied a little bit during games, I think that's an adjustment for sure. I just think it's an emotional, pro sports or any sports, an emotional thing. And I think, you know, when you do something well, your immediate reaction is to want to go, you know, high five someone or do something like that. I think they'll get through that part of it okay, but like all your instincts tell you to do otherwise. And, you know, I'm watching the Korean game a little bit, and I'm seeing guys high five and do some things like that, which you're not supposed to. And I think as time goes on, I think that'll be okay. I mean, I think you're kind of overemphasizing not doing those things, you know, knowing that it's probably going to happen a little bit, but you just don't want to go crazy with it. And you know, you have to have the rule and you have to do that. But at the same time, you know, I think certain guys are going to get emotional, and you're going to see some high fives and you're going to see some hugs and stuff like that.
In conversation with Tim Leeper, former Blue Jays first base coach. Tim, what I like about the Korean League and just the creativity and in some other sports too, you hear, where you can pay to have a cutout picture of yourself, or there was like a stuffed animal day that they then gave to charity. And if there was one thing, if like a foul ball hits you, you get some money or something. Like if it hits and knocks out your pitcher. Like, do you see any like weird, cool stuff like that? Like, hey, you know what? If you could turn into something for charity or something weird and have your cutout there and see it on TV, that might be kind of interesting.
Those are actually good. It's not the challenge you want, but they're great challenges for the your marketing department for sure. You know, trying to find a way to create revenue streams and to create interest and stuff. That is pretty cool. As long as you keep the blow up dolls out of there, I think you're probably going along the way. You're doing the right thing. You know, those are stuck in there a little bit in Korea, but I think that's pretty good. I think you're going to see some really creative, cool things from some teams out of this, and it'll be interesting to see what people come up with.
We know that fans influence lots of sports, Tim. Football, absolutely. Basketball, yeah. No fans in baseball sense. Well, that obviously the ambiance and the electricity in the building will be obviously different, but the actual play on the field, do you think it'll affect it much?
It'll be different. I mean, it's kind of like playing like a B game in spring training when you got nobody out there. The one thing I like about it, like, you're going to really see the competitiveness of guys like in these situations, which is good. And the fact that it is a 60 game season, legitimately, the first 30 games, like, everybody's in this thing. Like, everybody legitimately has a chance. I think once you see teams that are, like, realizing, hey, we're not very good and we're not – that's where I think things can get a little bit, you know, a little bit squirrely. Because if you got nothing to play for and you got no energy going, you know, even in a regular season with fans, when you're playing out the string – like, that's not a lot of fun. It's probably even less so when you're not playing in front of any fans. So I think early on, I think it'll be fine. I think guys will get adjusted to it. The one thing about really good competitive players that play at this level, that whether they're playing a game of cards in the clubhouse, whether they're, you know, shooting darts or playing pool or something, guys are competitive. And I think that's the one part that you're going to really see. Like, even though there's no fans in the stands, you're going to see who's really got that attitude that they really want to win. They're really driven to play. I think that you might want to keep the live mics off the field a little bit because you're going to hear some pretty good things. But other than that, I think part of it's going to be pretty interesting, and it's going to be a lot, very telling on a lot of different guys.
Tim, that being said, you see, keep the mic, and you obviously were a first base coach too. What are some of the things the guys talk about at first base? Like, sometimes we hear a conversation, sometimes we don't. Can you share with us some of these weird conversations you've heard at first base?
Well, I mean, the biggest thing, like from a job perspective, is you got to, as a first base coach, you're proactive and you're trying to play the play out before it happens, before the pitch happens. So you're kind of like looking around the field, like, hey, if this ball is hit here, you kind of want to paint a picture to the runner before the ball is actually in play. But the biggest thing is, like, guys don't get signs. And no matter who you are, it's universal. No matter how many signs and or how simple your signs are, guys don't get them. So sometimes it became as simple as, like, hey, you got to steal on this play, or we got to hit and run on. And when there's no fans, there's no background noise, you really can't do that. So I think the fact that there's social distancing and you really can't touch guys, you know, a lot of times if there's a hit and run on, I would go up to the runner and touch his lower back and squeeze him or pinch him or do something to let him know something was on. So if they're not allowed to touch the runner, they're not allowed to do that. So those are the things that go on. I know, like, I spent, like, you know, times over there talking to the first baseman during games, and there's some pretty animated conversations that go on over there, and especially with no mics, then I think you definitely don't want to have those conversations.
I think that's fascinating, Tim. The physical, just little intricacies there, where going up and poking or squeezing to give a sign or a message that you can't do. That's going to be interesting to see the creativity from first base coaches, but also managers with the expanded rosters. How do you use your starting pitching? How do you use your bullpen for National League teams? You have a DH now. Like, these are all questions where managers, who quite often don't get maybe enough credit, are going to have to get creative at times.
I think that's a super, super good point. And these are not things that are in your analytics departments right now. These are uncharted waters, and you don't really have a good book for this. And so it's going to challenge people. And honestly, yeah, I do think people with a lot of managing experience, and especially guys that have managed a lot of years, not only in the big leagues, but have come up in managing games in the minor leagues, I think there's definitely going to be an emphasis, and the guys that have done it, I think they stand an advantage during this time. And the other thing is, like, you're legitimately playing playoff games right out of the chute. And I think it's really important. So, and you're going to be doing it with guys that aren't in great shape. I mean, it's going to be hard for these starting pitchers to get spread out. And, you know, the managing of your bullpen is going to be enormous. And sometimes the guys are going to make right moves. And just because you're going to be using so many different pitchers, like, there's still no guarantee that it's going to end up okay. And it wasn't that the move was poor. It's just that all the pitchers aren't going to be ready. I mean, it takes, you know, for us, I'm thinking about it in Toronto, like in 15 or 16, it always took 2 months for our bullpen kind of to shape up and for guys to get in their roles. And, like, right now you're going to have 2 months and the season's going to be over. So, like, knowing who that hot guy is early, knowing your go-to guys early, like, you may think that X guy is your closer, but all of a sudden he gets out of the gate slow, and you can't afford to, like, let a guy lose games for you in the eighth and ninth inning, you know, because you just don't have 100, you have 100 less games to make those games up. So a lot of feel is going to go into the moves that are made during the games here.
Well, Tim, you've already mentioned a couple times the shortened season, but how much pressure are on guys, or is that potentially going to be an advantage for a young Blue Jays team that has all these young guys who want to show that they belong and they'll be superstar players in baseball? Then you have teams like the Yankees, who have all the pressure on the world, the amount of money they've spent in the offseason to win the World Series. Could a shortened season kind of be an advantage for these super young Blue Jays?
I think more than most teams, especially from an offensive standpoint, I think the Jays really, really benefit from this. I mean, they got some really talented guys. You know, it kind of, like, older guys, there's a risk of, like, ramping up too early. Like, they're pushing themselves a little bit quicker. But at the end of the day, you really don't know. I always look at the season like this. Like, people get out of the gate really hot and people get out really slow. And then your second time around the league, it kind of evens itself out, and then you're left, and then you're kind of left with what's left. And right now, like, you can get out of the gate hot and stay hot for like 60 days. I mean, you look at last year, like, Washington won the World Series, and I think at one point they were like 19-30 or 19-32 or something like that. And, like, they'd be out of it, obviously, at this year. So I think we can try to predict what teams have advantage. But, you know, I don't think you really know. I think injuries and health obviously is going to play a huge factor in this, but the fact that the Blue Jays have, you know, this core of guys with Bichette and Guerrero and Gurriel and Biggio and guys that are young and really talented. Like, I really think this could favor them a lot, you know. And at the end of the day, though, pitching depth is going to be the key and be able to stop the other team from scoring. And you know, I don't know about if they have the pitching depth or not. Hopefully they do. But pitching kind of falls along the same lines as the hitting. Like, guys get off the hot starts, and if they stay hot for like a month and a half, that's going to be really, really good for your team. But the important thing is you recognize early who those guys are and making sure you go to them as much as you can to keep your team on that winning track.
In conversation with Tim Leifer, former Blue Jays first base coach. Tim, just overall, how the Players Association and the commissioner's office have handled this reboot has just been a PR disaster. And then you have Rob Manfred going on national radio the other day, essentially saying, hey, you know what? It was going to be 16 games no matter what. And then he sort of walked that back, saying he thought that with a second spike, that was how it was going to be. Like, why do you think 60 games makes the most sense from the league perspective? Because that really seemed to be, okay, hey, we're digging in and it's going to happen like this one way or the other.
Well, that wasn't a great quote if a grievance is filed, because that's the whole point of the grievance. And I could see why he was walking that one back. Obviously there's a financial, and I'm not on the inside of this, but like, obviously there was a financial, I mean, it's the whole thing's financial, but there's a financial piece to how much money they want to pay out. And obviously, I mean, the words straight out of his mouth said the 60 games was where it was tolerable for the owners and tolerable for the prorated salaries to go into effect. So, you know, it's a shame, because there was a lot of wasted time. There was a lot of grandstanding. I think there was a proposal by the PA for what, 120 games. And, you know, I know that the Major League Baseball counted with 80 games, but to actually come out and say that it was only going to be 60 games, like, you know, why did we play this all out in public and everything? I mean, I really commend, you know, the NBA's got a whole different structure, and I really commend the NHL and the NHLPA for what they did in terms of, like, just being under the radar, getting the protocol set up first, being ultra responsible, and like playing it out between themselves in terms of playing it out in public. So, you know, I think the baseball part, it's been a black eye to the game a little bit, but I think people's memories are short too. And once they start playing, I think people will be into it. And I do want to say this too, like, baseball had a much rougher go because they hadn't started yet, where the other team, other sports were already like 80% over. But at the same time, that also left you, I think, a lot of space to be creative and do some things, not necessarily to make the season perfect, but a lot of things to, like, bring a lot of, to bring interest to your game and to make people excited about your game. And I think that's the area where we really failed to, like, do the right thing.